Okay, so we're doing Chomesh, Parshas Vayigash, Perak Mem Zayin. I guess, Pasuk Zayin. Chas Tas Yud. Specifically, this is the little Rashi I want to do. But basically, it's the encounter with Yaakov Avinu and Paro. Right? Yaakov Avinu and Paro. And basically, Yaakov comes down to Mizraim, and Yosef brings Yaakov, the great father, who he knew about, right? He brought him to, to Paro, before Paro. And it happened is, so he brought him before Paro, and Vayivarech Yaakov as Paro. So he stood before Paro, and he blessed him, which Rashi says, just Shaila Shalom. You go before a king, you probably bless him, but that's then it's Shaila Shalom.
Basically, just like a greeting.
And it says, "Vayomer Paro, Yaakov kama yimeshnei chayecha." How long have you lived? How old are you? He looked very old, right? So he says, "Vayomer Yaakov el Paro, yimeshnei megorei shloshim ashana maat viroyim ha yimeshnei chayai." They're very long, short and all, short and bad. Lo hitzigu yimecha yishnei chayai vosai megram, and I didn't reach the age of my fathers because I just had a very difficult life, so I look old, but I'm not that old. Just like I had a very hard life, so I'm very aged. Right, and I think one of the Farshim said, I think, he didn't want him to get jealous. Right? So he's saying, I look very old, but don't feel like anything special. I'm really just, not old and up to old age. On the contrary, it's an indicative of my difficulties. You know, the fact that I look very old, not because I've managed to somehow make it to some super-duper old age. Okay. So then, it says, Vayivarech Yaakov es Paro, Vayitzei milfnei Paro. So Yaakov blessed Paro, and he left from before him. Right? So, what does it mean he blessed him? He already blessed him before. So Rashi says, Keder kol neftar mifnei sarim. When you leave before a king, or whatever, a prince, so you bless them, and you take thereby you ask Rishus to leave. So ma bracha bercha, what bracha did he give to Paro? What did he say? Sheyala nilas l'raglav, that the Nile would rise to his feet. The fisha ein Mitzrayim shosa megishamim, because Mitzrayim doesn't really get rain. It's not watered by rain, as most places are. El Nilus Ola Omashka. The Nile rises and feeds the land. Right? It's fed, its water comes from the Nile rising up. Okay? That's the way it's irrigated. Not through rain, but through the Nile. So the bracha was that the Nile would rise up to the feet of Paro. Umi Bechaso Shel Yaakov Eilech. And from the time of the bracha of Yaakov and onwards, Ayaparo ba al Nilos, the Paro would come to the Nile, the Huola the Grasso, and it would come to greet him with Mashkeh Zaretz, and it would water the earth. Tanchuma. So his basic bracha was that the Nile should rise up to his feet, right, and water Mitzrayim. And sure enough, that's what happened. From after that bracha, that's what happened. And there's another Rashi who says that basically once Yaakov came down, the drought ended, even though it was only 2 years into it. Basically, because when Yaakov came down, it was the bracha, and it ended up, the drought ended. Okay? So that was kind of his bracha. But not bracha, the drought would end, the bracha would be that when he would go, they would rise to his feet. So what do you guys think about that? So then he's asking, it seems like a magical bracha. How does Yaakov Avinu exactly have the power to make Paro be able to control the water like that? I mean, the water rises as Paro goes down there. I mean, how does that work? Is it that the bracha gives, you can convey magical powers onto Paro, then you can make the water rise up? Doesn't seem to be too reasonable, but in fact, Rashi's saying that's what happened. It's funny, what's Yaakov thinking that he could give the bracha? And then, in fact, it's happening. So is God making a miracle every single time Paro walks at the water or rises up? Like, either way, it's hard to understand this thing, you know? But, I mean, in theory, the problem is that, yeah, what's the import of the miracle? Is that, I mean, presumably, Paro is a Mitzrayim. They had some sort of a God complex, right? Like, they looked at themselves as gods. That is the pasuk of Rashi by Shemos, where it says that God said to Moshe to go out and greet him by the river. Right? And it says, because they would go out at the river in order to, to make it look like they don't go to the bathroom. So they'd go early in the morning and then go to the bathroom by the river, by the Nile. So they'd be able to, to maintain their thing, that they're gods. Right? Are you guys aware of that? So I think it's the pasuk. I mean, I have to see if I can find it. But that's what he says, is go out to them and it'll be by the river. Right? I don't know where this is exactly. But it's a Rashi on the pasuk. Lechel paro yeh baboker hine yotze ha-maima. V'nitzav, right? So v'nitzav ha-maima. So it's on pasuk chav tezvav. Zayin tezvav. So he made himself a god. He said, I don't have to go to the bathroom. So he went to the bathroom there. So what's my point here? Point is that you see that the Paros were gods in Mitzrayim. Or at least they believed that the Paros were gods. So, I mean, the Nile was also a god. Right? But this type of thing of the Nile rising up to Paro would seem to, cater to the fact that Paro is a god. He has magical powers, he's a god. I mean, it doesn't seem to be a very good idea to cater to. It's like you're playing right into their Avodah Zarah, and you're going to support and strengthen it. Now, Paro is going to have the perfect proof that he is a god. He does have powers. I mean, it's nice that you want to, kiss up to Paro or whatever it is and talk nice to him, but what's Yaakov trying to do here? Trying to accomplish, he's trying to support the Avodah Zarah, the local Avodah Zarah, their gods. Doesn't seem to be a smart idea. Right? What's the point of giving him such a bracha? Is that really a good philosophical move? Right? This is Rabbi Zimmer's question. He walked home with Rabbi the other night. Friday night he asked him that. What's the deal? It sounds like a bad idea. You look, you could give him a different bracha. Have a nice day. Something like that. Okay, so I'll tell you that overnight, so we thought I had this question Friday night, and then overnight, so it was Rabbi Zimmer thought of one answer, I thought of a different one. So I'll tell you both of them, and then I'll tell you how we said this over at Shal Shudas and Yeshiva, and then Fistel realized that we could kind of unify them. So, it's a nice little story. So, basically, I'll start with Zimmer's answer. So he wanted to say like this, is that really... So he says like this. You see, for instance, is that Yaakov Avinu, or let's say that Yosef and Yaakov were interested in like the perfection of Mitzrayim. They weren't just interested in, and you see God in through the Makos. Wasn't just interested in living there, and not teaching them, but on the contrary, they're interested in teaching them ideas. You see, for instance, even when Yosef interpreted the dreams, he said to Paro, it's from God, right? So he talked about God. And you see, for instance, when they wanted to get food to Yosef, there's a Rashi which says, it says that Paro said to them, listen, whatever Yosef says, you should do. So he says, what do you mean, whatever Yosef says? So Rashi says, Yosef told them all to get Mila. Right? He told them all to get Mila. And he says, Milo, I don't want to get Milo. So he said, the Paro said to them, he says, well, then you, if you want food, then you should have saved your own food. He said, well, I saved my food, but it rotted. He says, well, if your Paro, Yosef said, you know, you made your food rot, who knows what he's going to say if he's going to get angry at you. So therefore, listen to what he says. Whatever he says, though. So it's funny. The question is, what was Yosef doing? Why is he trying to get that meat to have Milo? But he wants all of them trying to get Milo? What's the point of that? You know? So, and he wanted to say, like, you see, for instance, Yaakov, Shimon, and Levi also got them all to have Mila and Shechem, right? And they think, he said that the Ramban says that that Yaakov Avinu thought it was really a good plan. He didn't really plan on killing them all. He thought that they'd basically become partners, and they'd all be involved in the Bris Avraham, or they'd take a part of the ideas of Bris Mila, like the perfection of Bris Mila, and the Tumim of Bris Mila. And he'd teach them those ideas, and he'd help bring them to a level of perfection. So he wanted to say that maybe that's what Yosef was trying to do to Mitzrayim. He figured that he's in control. He might as well force upon them, based upon his power, his political power, the ideas of Bris, and to be able to teach them and bring them to a higher level. And since he has control, he figured he'd use it to be able to teach them, to help bring them to a higher level. Which is ultimately the purpose of the Makos, so I got us to teach them all the different ideas about God. Break them away from their own czars. You know? So you see, it's like a trend to break so far as the Jews were living in Mitzrayim, they wanted to break them free of their own czar and to try to teach them good ideas. So he wanted to say, maybe the thing is like this. See, in the Mitzrayim, there was a big major worship of the Nile. Right? That was the big god. And he wanted to say is that the idea of them worshipping Paro is something that you don't find, at least in the Torah, until in Shemos there, by Paro, so the next Paro. See, that was a different Paro. Either it's a new Paro, or it's a different Paro who totally dissociated himself. I'm sorry, either it's a new Paro, or a same guy who totally dissociated himself from the original Paro. But that was already later. But he wanted to say at that point, at the point of Yosef and this Yaakov and all that, that was not a philosophy of Mitzrayim yet. They worshipped the Nile and they had their other gods, but the idea of worshipping a human being as a god was not something which they yet had. That was like, no one even thought of doing such a thing. It's crazy. It's a human being as a god? That's a Nile is a powerful force, which is their whole source of sustenance. That they worshipped. That was a major source of idolatry. So what Yaakov wanted to do is he wanted to direct them away from the bracha, from the idolatry of the Nile. And the way he would do that is through showing them that the Nile is subordinate to a person. And by the Nile being subordinate to a person, so then you're not going to worship the Nile anymore. Because you see that it's basically, it comes up whenever a power goes out there. So now no one's going to worship a person. And rather, now you're not going to worship the Nile because it becomes like a subordinate thing. So he was thereby hoping to direct them away from this idolatrous tendency. And how does it go up when power goes up there? I don't know, whatever. But this way, they'd basically break them from their crazy worship of the Nile. Right? But it turns out that was good. But later on, it ended up backfiring. Because they stooped, the Melech Chadash stooped to a new low level, and he made himself a god. So instead of making the Nile the god, now he basically made himself the god, and then it basically didn't end up doing anything. It forced him to have a new innovation in idolatry, where instead of the Nile being the god, he was the god, and the pharaohs were the god. You with me? But his bracha was an attempt to really reform them in terms of breaking them away from a certain trend in their idolatry of the Nile. There's a little bit of the problem is like, okay, fine, but bottom line is what happened. Bottom line is, what was the bracha and how did it work? Was it magic or is it not magic? And if it is magic, then how did it rise? I mean, Rashi seems like he's saying that it actually did rise up. So how'd that happen? Right? So it's kind of, you know, it's a nice theory, but it doesn't quite fill in the gaps about what did happen, right? Okay, so then, so my pshat addresses that, okay? My pshat addresses that. And I wanted to say different. See, here's the thing. Let me ask you a question. How do you think it bodes for Paro, the king of Egypt, that there's this massive famine in Egypt? Is that good for him or bad for him? It's good? What? Not good for his approval, right, exactly. If there's like major low economic numbers, high unemployment rates, things like that make people upset, make people unhappy, they're starving, they're like selling their souls to Paro, their house, their this, their that, and it makes Paro very unpopular. People blame the leadership. That's what happens when people aren't happy. They blame the king, they blame the leader, they blame, right? It's very bad for public approval to have an economic downturn. People get upset. In fact, they even rebel sometimes, right? They could overthrow the leader, the rulership. They're just upset. They fight, you know. Agreed? That's not good. It's not good for him. Now, is it also not good for Yaakov and Yosef and the Jews to live in a country which is in political turmoil? Like it says, Chazal says, you should daven for the shalom of the malchus, because if not for a malchus, each person would kill each other. It would be like a jungle. So the idea is that we appreciate, and you see, for instance, Mordechai saved Achashverosh's life, is we realize that even if we don't love the king, better to be under a king, especially this king, who is Paro, who is together with Yosef, better be under a stable kingdom than to have lawlessness. That's terrible. So here Yaakov's coming to this country. It's in his best interest to have Paro not lose his power due to this famine. And Paro is certainly worried about that. This is a dangerous type of a thing for Mitzrayim and for his power. But Yaakov Avinu wants Paro to be able to stay in power. He wants Yosef to be able to stay second in command. He wants to live in a country which is stable, which has a kingdom. Okay? Agreed? So the bracha now is Yaakov is doing, is advising Paro how to maintain his popularity. Now, in one sense, in the middle of this famine, it's not really possible to be that popular. But the famine will end, as all these things do, as all economic downturns end, pretty much. I mean, a famine's not going to last forever. But just because the famine ends doesn't necessarily mean that Paro is going to gain back his popularity. Doesn't always work that way, right? People could be irrevocably angry at Paro and blame him for this whole thing, and then he may be gone. That may be the end of Paro. Right? It's not so simple. Right? So what Yaakov is doing is he's giving him advice. Is how do you, Paro, maintain or get back your clout and your popularity and your kingdom? And he's advising him as follows. He's saying it's like this, is that there will be an upturn. There will be an upturn. The Nile will come back. The water will come back. The economy will come back. Now, what you have to do is you have to identify yourself with the success of Mitzrayim. When the river comes up, you have to be there and say, wow, Mitzrayim is a force and a power. We're the rising nation. We're back. You got to be there in their face, those photo ops, those perfect times where you can't hide and let them say, oh, Paro stinks, we got an isle back. You have to be there touting the success of Mitzrayim and the power of Mitzrayim and be there on the upturn. And you have to be in the limelight. Now, how do you do that? So what I want to say is he basically says, when it does come back, it's not, when does it come up? When does the water rise? So what I think is that there's a science to when the water rises. Just like, for instance, in an ocean, you have high tide and you have low tide. So you have patterns about when the river overflows and when it doesn't. And this is something which, using Chachma, using your whatever, you know, whatever, weatherman or scientists or whatever it is, you could study, you could find the patterns, and you could figure out when the water is going to come up and when it's not going to come up. And basically, Paro, use your chachma, figure out when it's going to come up, and step out there and say, look, it's coming up, and we're the strong nation, and do your thing. So, and you don't tell them, you don't have to tell them you have magical powers. In fact, you could even tell them, look, it's chachma, and I'm a chacham, and I studied the thing, and I understand it, and on the contrary, and this is the way you can take control over it, and this is good, and the contrary is good with what Zimmer was saying, is that it's not a magical, idolatrous thing, the Nile, it's subject to chachma, and I am studying it, and I'm using a chachma to be able to master it, and where we are Mitzrayim, and we're a rising force and power, and we're back. And be there in their face, and when there is this upturn, and then you'll become popular. Don't miss this opportunity. You got to be there. You got to use your chachma, figure out the times, and do it. And sure enough, that's what happened. Paro did that. He stood there. He figured out the times, and he ended up making himself again, becoming popular again. But, and this is the shidduch, you know, that Fistel noticed, as he said, but what ended up happening is Paro took it hard and he made it into an idolatrous thing. He kind of went away from this idea that I have chachma and I'm figuring out when it comes, and ended up making it into idolatry. And says, look, I have power, and he made himself into a god, and that's how it developed later. But originally the idea was just to make it a chachmadik move, and to be able to gain the people over by showing them the chachma and being there with them when the Nile comes back. And that was the bracha. The bracha wasn't magic. The bracha was advice. It was political advice. And he was advising him how to be successful, giving him guidance about how to be successful in this trying time. And that was in Yaakov's best interest, because again, he wanted to have a stable government just like old Klal Yisrael did. He wanted it also, so he was advising him how to do it. So it could be, what about the fact that it's idolatry, and isn't he worried that Paro is going to make it idolatrous? So that, I think Zimmer's answer is good, is that no, because there was no such thing as worshipping a man. At that time, there was no such god like that. That was a later innovation. At this point, they worshipped the Nile, and on the contrary, this would help them get away from the Nile. He doesn't say, it's not that the gods are angry at you and any of that. It's just a matter of, this is the natural thing. These are the cycles. I'll explain it. I'll know when it's coming out. It's subject to total analysis and chachma. And on the contrary, that would show and undermine the religion of the Nile, and it would bring up the idea of chachma, commitment to chachma, commitment to, as touted by Paro and Yosef. You see, they're mastering the situation. How are you doing? I'm saying Rashi's a little bit lav dafka, but sort of dafka. Because he's saying here is that the bracha is that the Nile should rise up to his feet, which means that he should go out there at the time that the Nile will rise, and this way it will come up to his feet. And that will have an image in the eyes of Mitzrayim. They'll see the Nile rising up, and they'll see Paro being there. And they'll associate the success of Mitzrayim and the upturn of Mitzrayim to Paro. And that's what happened. That Paro, from that time on, Paro would go out and it would come to his feet. And it would. It would. It's just that the way it worked was not because of magic, it was because he went out there at the right time. But the imagery he's portraying is the imagery which he's trying to portray to the eyes of the Mitzrim. The Mitzrim are supposed to see Paro going out there and the Nile rising up, and they're supposed to associate those two things together. But not necessarily in a magical way. It doesn't have to be. I mean, I don't know if Paro has to explain it. I'm not sure. He has to explain the details of it, or he just has to just be there and tout it and talk about it. I don't know if he's saying, though, look at me, I'm a magic man, I made water come up. That's not, the Yagamin wouldn't be advising him that. It's obvious that the Yagamin is not going to tell him to do that. But he's saying is, go there, but you create an image that they see. It's almost like, you know, these photo ops of any of these things, you know. When there's a good thing happens in America, the president goes out there and gets involved in these pictures. Did you do it? No, you didn't do it, but whatever. the soil, whatever, somehow people just think of you and the success and the whatever, and that's just the way it is, you know? And people aren't smart and they don't think it through and start figuring out, well, what role exactly did the president have in this or whatever. It's, you gotta make sure, figure out when it's gonna happen and put yourself in the you know, there. That's like a chachamdik thing to do, but it's depicting the image which he's going to convey, and that's the image. Be there and have the water flow onto your feet. But it does, I mean, even though it may sound like the magic thing, but he's not telling him that. And it would, no one would ever think that unless the fact that they, and I think that's helpful where Zerus thing helps out, is that if they already worshipped Paro, then it's like a dangerous thing Yaakov's still doing, because he's basically playing into their idolatry. But if they didn't do that at that point, which it doesn't, there's no indication that we found that they did at that point. So then it's like it doesn't play into that. No one even believes such a thing. It's not. There's no such thing like that. You don't worship a person. It's a chiddush to say, hey, well, a human being, a flesh and blood, is a god. That's like a crazy idea. Whoever heard of such a thing? That was like an innovation, right? How could he be a god? He goes to the bathroom. So that's what the Paro started, like, oh, no, I don't go to the bathroom or whatever. But, like, it's not a natural thing. I mean, it's one thing to make a star and the sun and the moon and the Nile into gods. These are truly powerful things. They're like Mishamshim. They really run the world. But a human being who's just flesh and blood goes to the bathroom, was born, is going to die. So that's what the Mitzvah had to do. He doesn't go to the bathroom. He's not going to die. He's going to live in this hut. And he's going to mummify him. And, you know, these, whatever, the pyramids. And that was part of their thing. But if they had to develop a way to make a human being a god, it's not so simple to do that, you know? I mean, Christianity somehow pulled it off. But it's like a modern idea. It's not just a natural, as far as we know, we don't have any instance of someone prior to that becoming a human god. It's like a chiddush. Even the Torah talks about gods. It doesn't say, like, you look up at the skies and you'll see. It's just like, it's. You can say sometimes, it's just you don't think they would ever do something so crazy. So Yaakov's idea was a good idea. It's just they stooped to such a low level that they even did that. It's similar, as Zimmer says, similar to, like, the Rambam says that the Chazal wrote the Gadatas, Derech Mashal, because they figured no one would ever take it literally because it's so crazy. But sure enough, people did. You know? But sometimes you can't anticipate the stupidity and how crazy things will get. So it's a good plan, assuming no one worships a human being, which is crazy. So then it's a great plan. No one's going to think he's powerful. He actually has magical powers. He's a god and he has control over the Nile River. That's ridiculous. It must be his chachma. So that would be good for the people. But, you know, in the long run, it devolved into, you know, crazy idolatry. Crazier, even crazier than the Nile, worshipping a human being. Yeah. Okay, any thoughts? Typically, in general, we explain Bracha's advice. Yaakov is giving a bracha to his son. He's advising them. He's guiding them. The idea of bracha, Gadol, Chacham, gives you a bracha. He knows your personality. He knows the situation you have in life, and he gives you a guidance that can help you, proceed. So that's what the great Yaakov is doing. It's great Chacham advising Paro, giving him advice, which makes sense because that's what Yosef did. Yosef advised him and he gave him advice about Mitzrayim, and he says, so you see that he recognized Yosef as the great Chacham, and now he knows Yaakov Avinu is the great father of this Chacham, and Yosef says he learned everything he knew from, knows from Yaakov. So presumably Yaakov is going to give him he knows that Paro will appreciate Chachma. So now what? The Plame Shadi is just going and teaching him, telling him magic? It's like not in line with the whole idea of what Yaakov Avinu is. And Paro is a person who can appreciate Chachma. So it's like a bunch of, that's what he's saying. He's not saying magic. He's not telling him Mir's magic trick. Go and tell them you're a god. He's advising you. Right? It's good.